So we have a double parsha this week, Bahar B'chukusai, finishing up Sefer Vayikra Be'ezras Hashem. Let's see if we can finish with a splash and with a bang, as they say. Okay, Parshas Bahar opens up with the mitzvah of Yovel. All right. The mitzvah of Shemitah, which is that you work the land for 6 years, and then in the seventh year you leave it fallow, you don't work it. And that leads into the mitzvah of Yovel, which is every seven Shemitah cycles, which is every 49 years, on the 50th year, the land shall be left fallow. But there, it's not just that the land is left fallow, there is additional obligations as well. What are the additional obligations that come into play on the Yovel? So on the Yovel, if you have property that you've purchased throughout these past 50 years, fields, from another person, so those fields return to their original owners. If you have a slave that is in your household that works for you, a Jewish slave that is in your household, so at the Yovel year, no matter what, he must be released. He must be set free. And he has no option, by the way, of refusing. After the initial 6 years, he can say, oh, I want to stay, and we pierce his ear. But when it comes to Yovel, there's no such choice given to him. So regarding this notion of freeing the slaves, so it's slightly odd the way the pasuk phrases it. It says the following. Right, you shall sanctify the 50th year and proclaim freedom throughout the land for all its inhabitants. Where are these words written? Freedom throughout the land for all its inhabitants? What?
America.
Close. So there's a notion of it in the Declaration of Independence. What?
Well,
no, not the Constitution. No. Liberty Bell. And you see where... Everyone goes to Liberty Bell and they're so focused on looking at the crack, they never actually bother to see
that.
So true. We always look at what's wrong with something instead of what's good about something.
Wow.
We could stop Parsha Shia right now. Right. But Pasuk Yud. So, Ukratem Drobarat and Cholishvah, there's something for all its inhabitants. There's something that's slightly odd about this pasuk. We're not really calling freedom for all its inhabitants. Who's the freedom for? The freedom is for the slaves, not for all the inhabitants. Right? 50% of the population, at least, is free. So, what are we saying that we're calling for all the inhabitants? So, here we have an important lesson in employee and employer relationships. One has to be aware that as an employer, one that employs other people, it is not just a walk in the park. He has responsibilities. For example, let's even take the example of slavery. The Gemara teaches us that if, let's say, you only have one pillow, right? You have you, and you have your slave, you know who's going to get that one pillow? That's right. It's not going to be you. It's going to be the slave. You have a responsibility to care for your employee as an employer. It's not just abuse, get the most out of him, work him till he is no longer able to work. It's not a sweatshop model like you have, unfortunately, still in some places in the world today. It's supposed to be a caring and loving relationship. And as such, you have, as an employer, many obligations to your employee. In fact, the laws of schirut, the laws of work-employee-employer relationships, is filled mostly with responsibilities that the employer has to the employee. And that is why, when you're releasing your slave, in fact, in a certain sense, you are getting freedom as well. We're declaring freedom for all its inhabitants because so long as you have a slave, you are, in some form or other, enslaved to him. And that is why the slave gets set free, but also the master is getting set free. It is for all the inhabitants. Okay. While we're in this mitzvah of Yovel, Okay, well, two more on Yovel, maybe three. Yovel, the way that the whole process is set in motion, that the slaves are let go, and that the land transfers back to its original owners, happens on Yom Kippur. It's not actually on the first day of the year, but it happens on Yom Kippur. We blow the shofar, and then at that point, you know, that's the signal to say, okay, now release your slaves and return all the land deeds to their original owners. The question is, though, why is it necessary to blow the shofar before? We know, on Yom Kippur, you release the slaves. Right, for example, Sukkot, you're supposed to shake the Dalet Minim. There's no mitzvah that tells us that you're supposed to first blow the shofar to announce to everyone, okay, now take your Dalet Minim. The mitzvah is really to release your slaves, to take back the land. So why is it that we have to sound the land? Ta'abiru shofar b'chol ha'atzachem. Sound the shofar throughout your land. What's the significance of that? So the Minchas Chinuch writes the following. The Minchas Chinuch writes, it's such a beautiful insight into human beings. It says, this mitzvah, as much as we said before, that when you're an employer, it creates certain obligations upon you. But the bottom line is, it's pretty good having slaves. Right? It's cheap labor. It's room and board, but it's relatively cheap labor. Right? You have somebody who is at, for the most part, at your beck and call. And it's going to be exceedingly difficult for you to want to give up your slave. Says the Minchas Chinuch, we sound the shofar to let you throughout the land, so that you know that this is going on everywhere. You're not in this alone. Right? We want to create what we call positive peer pressure. Peer pressure, right? A lot of times people associate the word peer pressure with a negative connotation. Peer pressure. What's the first thing you think of? Right? Peer pressure, doing bad things. I don't know, all your friends are going drinking, all your friends are eating non-kosher. But peer pressure could also be a very, very positive thing. Peer pressure could also be what keeps you in the base medrash late at night. If there's a kol alayla that's going strong and there's 40 people in there, then people are going to feel, you know, push themselves a little bit further. Oh, wait, you know, this is what all the peers are doing. There's a lesson hidden over here in this Havira Shofar B'chol Ha'atzachem, that we should recognize that peer pressure is not just something for young kids, it's not just something for teenagers, it's something that's going to follow us into our adult lives as well. And we have to make sure that because there is this phenomenon called peer pressure, that we put ourselves amongst peers that are in fact pressuring us towards good. You want to keep up with the Cohens, right? But not in the, that's a random made up Jewish name, but you don't want to keep up with the Cohens to have a house as big as them, or a luxury car like they might have, or the Cohens that you want to keep up with are the Cohens that are stark and dedicated to their Avodas Hashem, that push themselves to find more chesed opportunities, that push themselves to enhance their life with a little more Torah. That is why we sound the shofar, to help the guy know that you're not in this alone. There is a peer group that is doing this along with you, and that peer pressure will hopefully help you get over the difficulty associated with releasing your slaves. Okay, I can't resist. I'll go back just to the first one for a second. In terms of an employer having obligations as well and needing to be sensitive to his employee, there is a famous tale told. It's not a tale. Tale implies like you're spinning tales. It's not a truth. This is a true story. There's a story about Rav Zalman Meltzer, who was once walking home with his nephew, Rav Finkel, Rav David Finkel. And they were walking, I don't know how many of you have ever had an occasion to do a tour in, not in Ashar, in Nachlaot. Nachlaot used to be a very, very different neighborhood than it is today. In Nachlaot lived famously Rav Arya Levine, right? A lot of other great rabbis. Rav Cook used to hang out in Nachlaot, or Yisrael, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Shari Chesed, and grew up in Nachlaot. I think his parents lived in Nachlaot. And there also lived the great Gaon Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer was once walking up back from the yeshiva with his nephew. So if you've been to Nachlaot, you know that some of the homes are not street level. There's like steps going up, like metal steps. It's almost like a fire escape. Steps going up, and it's like looks like a terrace, like in a motel. So sometimes you go up, and then there's like a narrow outside porch-like structure with like four doors, and those are four little dinky one-bedroom apartments. So Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer lived in these one-bedroom apartments. And one day he was walking with his nephew. They were walking up the steps. It was actually rather frigid outside. And as they were walking up the steps, Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer then decided to go back down. And then they walked back down, and they walked around the block, and then they walked back up. And then they decided, let's go back down. And they walked around the block, and it's pretty cold, and Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer is pretty advanced in age. And after they did it a third time, finally they went inside the house. So his nephew, Rav Finkel, asked Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, what's going on? Why is it that you decided to not go straight into the house? Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer told him, well, I'll tell you why. Inside the house was our Ozeret, our cleaning lady that helps. She comes once a week to help us keep the house in order. I and my wife are too frail, and she's kind enough to help us. While she works, she likes to sing. And I knew that if I entered the house, she would stop singing. Right? She would know that it would make me uncomfortable. And I didn't want her to compromise her work in any way and feel like she was in any way inhibited from working to her full capabilities and in the best possible way for her to operate. And since I know she likes to sing, I decided that I would walk around. Again, that is the sensitivity that an employer has to have towards his employee, and that is why it is for freedom for all the inhabitants. Going back to the first word for a second. Okay. Fine. This week's parsha is famous. Every week's parsha is famous, but this is famous for an ethical question that probably many times has confronted you. I'm sure at some point your teachers have spoken to you about it, and if not your rebbeim, then your philosophy professors. And that is the following: two people are walking in the desert. The water is scarce, is running out. In fact, Reuven has already finished all of his water, and now Shimon has just a little bit of water. Water for the both of you, there isn't enough. Water for one of you, there is. Shimon, the question is, what should he do now? Should Shimon share his water with Reuven, and they should both die eventually? Or should Shimon just drink the water himself and live and watch his friend Reuven die? You guys have heard that question? You know what the halakha is? This is a discussion in the Gemara. So it's a machlokas, actually. Right? There is an opinion that you should share the water. It might be Rav Preda, I think. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, you should drink the water. Why should you drink the water? He bases it based on the pasuk in this week's parsha. The pasuk in this week's parsha in Chafei Lamed Vav, I believe. Right? In Per Chafei Lamed Vav, yeah. Says, V'chei Achicha Imach. Right? Your brother should live with you. What does that imply? He should live with you. Have to live. And once you're living, then you can make your brother, your neighbor, live with you. But before that, so that's where Rabbi Kiva learns it from. Now this is odd. People ask famously, how is it that Rabbi Kiva, how is this consistent with Rabbi Kiva? Because after all, we have another famous story from Rabbi Kiva, which is very often sung throughout this
time of year. I'll sing the old version for you, as opposed to the YBC version. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Amar Rabbi Akiva. What are the next three words? Ve'ahavta, is that what you guys said? Le're'acha kamocha, you should love your neighbor as thyself. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Amar Ve'ahavta le're'acha kamocha, right? Sheli shalcha, shalcha, sheli, sheli, shalcha, etc. What's mine is yours, what yours is mine. Right. So how can it be that the same Rabbi Akiva says, on the one hand he says, Ve'ahavta le're'acha kamocha, right? Zeklal gadol batorah. This is a, and then at the same time he also says, well, maybe not too much ve'ahavta le're'acha, maybe not really kamocha, maybe just, you know. Right. You have to love yourself, but you have to love him like you love yourself.
Right, so you don't have to love yourself, but you should have to, if you can, you know, give to yourself, you can't be good to someone else as yourself.
What was that?
If you're not going to be good to yourself, you can't be as good to someone else as yourself. So,
no. You have to love yourself, that's clear, it's from the statement. Love him as you love yourself.
Right. If you're in the beginning, you're totally selfless, it's also bad. Has to be
done. Okay. Love him as yourself. But that statement just seems to imply that you should not come first. You're supposed to love yourself and you're supposed to love him equally. If you have, let's put it like this, let's detach you from the equation for a second. If you have two children, and you have four slices of pizza, right? You're supposed to love your children equally, assuming that none of them are lactose intolerant, and both love pizza, and both. So the way you'll divide up the pizza is two and two, because you love them equally, right? So it's true. It's supposed that you love brother one and brother two, that's true. Or daughter one and daughter two, or daughter one and brother two, yeah. Well, the same thing over here. You're supposed to love yourself, but you're supposed to equally love the other person. So in theory, maybe you should share it from that. So, how do we reconcile the two? On the one hand, v'chei achicha imach, he should live along with you, drink the water, and on the other hand, v'ahavta l're'acha kamocha zeklal gadol b'torah. So those of you from Fairlawn, anyone from Fairlawn? Yeah, Rabbi Yudin. Rabbi Yudin suggested the following. Rabbi Yudin said, v'ahavta l're'acha kamocha zeklal gadol, that's a big rule, b'torah. Meaning there's a difference between the realm of physical and the realm of the spiritual. In the realm of the physical, it's v'chai achicha imach. You're first supposed to take care of your own spirit, of your own physical needs, and then take care of others. V'havta l're'acha kamocha, love another person as yourself, is when it comes to the spiritual. Zeklal gadol b'torah. When it comes to Talmud Torah, you're not supposed to hoard. You're not supposed to hoard all the Torah knowledge for yourself. You're supposed to share it and share it equally. There's a statement that says, "Im lamadata Torah arbe." If you've learned a lot of Torah, it's in Pirkei Avos, which we learn during this time of year. Al tazik tova la'atzmecha. So literally means don't think of yourself too highly. Al tazik tova la'atzmecha. Don't think. You know, don't hold a tova for yourself. But the Lev Avos explains that al tazik tova la'atzmecha means don't hold it for yourself. Share it. Don't just hold the Torah that you learned. That is what you were born for. Torah is supposed to be shared. Rabbi Akiva is telling us an important lesson, right? Why did Rabbi Akiva's 24,000 chavrusas die? Right? Because they didn't say good morning to one another. It said, Lanagukov. It's not because they didn't say good morning to each other. That's not the type of manners that they lack. It's they didn't share their Torah with each other. Right? And when you don't share Torah, Torah is life. So if they're going to deprive other people of life, they're going to be deprived of life themselves. So we have a responsibility. We are here, Baruch Hashem, we're zocha to learn Torah,
and it should not be an endeavor that we take upon ourselves and just internalize. You should try to share that which you learn and enrich other people as well. Okay. This week in Parshas Bechukosai, we have a tochacha. A tochacha means a rebuke. Right? Of lest we don't keep the Torah, you know, ova avoy, watch out. But before we do, right, the Torah tells us the following. In Bechukosai Talechu, if you shall follow my decrees, observe my commandments, then you'll have X, Y, and Z, which is good. It gets into the tochacha when it says if you don't follow. But before we even get to the tochacha, I want to discuss just this very beginning, this first pasuk. It says, if you will follow my decrees, this is Chavav Gimel, if you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, then I will provide da 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 da. Barashi says beautifully, right, this gives hopes to all of us. Right, this is a little bit discouraging if you read the pasuk. If you follow my decrees and observe my commandments, then I will provide. Right? Raise your hand if you're really successful in following the decrees and observing the commandments. Who amongst us can possibly say that I'm able to do it 100%? I don't think anyone. I don't think there's a person on earth who can. Ein tzadik asher lo yechta. There's no one who's righteous as never commits sin. It's impossible. So if that's the case, you know, we might as well just close the book. Oh no, he will never provide. Kadosh Baruch Hu will never provide because we'll never succeed in following the decrees. So what does Rashi say? Rashi say, "Im bechukotai telechu sheteyu ameilim." What's ameilim? Toil, work hard, attempt. As long as you're attempting, then you will be rewarded. That is the key to success, right? It is, we say it also when we make a siyum. We've mentioned this once before. When we make a siyum, we say, Anu amelim, we work, we toil, vehem amelim, and they, those people that don't, they also toil. Anu amelim mekabim schar, we toil and we get schar, hem amelim veinam mekabim schar, they toil and they don't get reward. So the Chafetz Chaim was once asked, what do you mean, they toil and don't get reward? Of course they get reward. I see, you know, my neighbor, a fine goyisha individual, right? He goes to work every day, he toils, and he makes a pretty decent salary. I mean, I don't see his bank accounts, but judging by his cars and his clothes and his lifestyle, it's fair to assume that he makes a salary. He toils and he gets reward. So what's shot? So the Chafetz Chaim explains the following. He says he's not getting reward for the toil. What is he getting reward for? He's getting reward for the success, not for what he's toiled. Meaning, let's say that he would be a shoemaker, right? I don't know if it's true now, but there's a Tsar Nicholas once commissioned somebody to make boots for his army, and he had very specific instructions. He said, I want these boots to be made of the finest leather, you know, soft but rugged. Okay. I want it to have fur inside, you know, that's durable, that will last long, but it has to be very soft, which is like an almost impossible combination, because if it's overly soft, I want it to have pockets where you could put a knife, but I want it to be waterproof. Right, which is again like this is before the days of Ziplocs, you know, it was like that. So the shoemaker worked and worked and worked and worked, experimented with one, didn't work. Yeah. 8 months later, he turns to the Tsar and he says, I'm sorry. He turns to the Tsar's messenger and says, I've really tried everything. I cannot do it. Maybe you'll find somebody in the world that can. I doubt it, but I can't do it. So if you don't mind, I just want to collect my, you know, my wages for the past 8 months, and I'll be on my way. So the Tsar's accountant said, you know, what are you talking about? No boot, no loot. You're not getting paid.
He's like, but I've worked hard for them. He's like, we don't care. Like, they just laughed at him. We don't see no boots. I said, you're not going to see any money then. I said, that's the general. So my neighbor who's getting paid, he's not getting paid to work hard. He's getting work to produce for the company. We, on the other hand, are getting reward. Whether we end up producing or not is less relevant. As long as we're working hard, we will continue to see results. And there's somebody once came to the Chafetz Chaim, I think it was the Chafetz Chaim, and he told him, I want to take my son out of yeshiva. What do you mean you want to take your son? Well, you know, he'll never be the Vilna Gaon. Might as well take him out of yeshiva. So, well, I guess it couldn't be the Chafetz Chaim, it had to have been somebody later. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said to him, well, alright. So though, I just want to tell you, before you take your son out, I think you should consider giving up your business. He's really giving up my business. Whatever for? Well, you know, Rockefeller you'll never be. So I might as well. Alright. So what does that mean? He'll never be Vilna Gaon. So nobody in this room possibly, well, I can certainly say that by myself. So maybe nobody in this room will be the Vilna Gaon. But so what? That doesn't mean that we should stop learning. It doesn't mean that we should give up on Torah and Mitzvahs. As long as we're a Meilim, then I, capital I, well, I guess I is always capital, but I meant then I, Hashem, will provide X, Y, and Z. Okay. One last word. In the middle of the Tochacha, Chaf Vav Lamed Beis, it says, V'hashimoti ani et ha'aretz v'shamemu aleo ivechem. Right. It says, you know, I will kick you out of the land. Terrible things will happen, you know. Forced into cannibalism. You know. Terrible, terrible things. And then adding on to that, he says, and I will make your land, the land desolate, and your foes who dwell upon it will be desolate. So over here in the middle of this Tochacha, the Ramban over here understands that we have a glimmer of a silver lining. Right? I will make the land desolate. What does that mean? I will make the land desolate and your foes who dwell upon it will be desolate. It means that while we are exiled, nothing will grow here in this land. And we have, Hashem seen it. 2,000 years, right? We've had this land occupied in turn by Romans, right, by Muslims, Turks, English, and a whole slew of other people in the middle. And nobody's cultivated the land successfully. Right? And that is a bracha. Imagine if you will, or my friend gives this example, says, imagine if you will, if the Indians come back to the governor of New York, they say to him, listen, we want New York back now. Right? You bought it for 24 wapams, we'll give you 48. You know, double. No. I'll give you, well, yeah, you're right, inflation and everything, you know, we'll give you $48,000. $48 million. $48 billion. Right? There, it's priceless. You can't. All that's been invested in it, and all that it's been built up, there ain't, right? Imagine if this land for 2,000 years had been able to produce and be built up. And then the Jews would come back and say, well, it would be a much, much harder process, if at all possible, to get the land back. Well, I know that you've really built a rich culture over here, but, you know, we are the Jews and we want it back. It would be impossible. Right? Now, for the first time, they've discovered oil in Eretz Israel. Right? Off the coast. Drilling in the ocean. Imagine if they would have discovered it at some point in the day. Right? Everyone around us has oil. Libya, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iran. Everyone around us has oil. Imagine if Israel would have had oil also. Who would have given up that fortune?
So this is a little bit of nechama. You'll be gone, but fear not, in terms of your home, I will make sure that there is nothing here, so that nobody will be overly resistant when you return. As is, we're facing some enemies that want us out of here. So imagine if we had even more. Okay. We'll just end on a positive note. At the end of the parsha, the tochacha, 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 and then it says some weird laws. What are the weird laws at the end of tochacha? The laws of Erechin. What are the laws of Erechin? The laws of Erechin are that if a person says, I want to give my value to the Beis HaMikdash, then depending on his age, he has to give a certain amount of money. I have to give, you know, whether it be 5 shekel, whether it be 20 shekel, whether it be 50 shekel, 30 shekel, whatever it is, it changes based on age and gender. So what is that doing suddenly at the end of the tochacha? So, the pshat is like this, I think. You know, there's a story told in when the Nazis came into Cloisenberg. So they did what they do when every time they get into a town. They round up all the Jews and take them to the town square, to the, you know, generally the town square. One side is the church, as you know, the other side is the shul. They give them to the town square. Sometimes they take them into the shul. Sometimes they just do it in the town square. They humiliate them. They gather them. This is before the actions even, just when they first get to town. Inevitably, they bring their rabbi, and they humiliate him as well, and thus hope to humiliate the community. So they did this in Cloisenberg as well. They brought Rav Halberstam, the Cloisenberger Rebbe, and they began to tug at his beard, right? And then they began to cook him. And the Nazi SS officer kicked him, and he said, do you still believe that you're the chosen nation? And the Cloisenberger, you know, said, yes. So this infuriated the Nazi officer. And he said, you stupid Jew, are you kidding me? And he kicks him even harder, and he beats him, and he's bleeding, and he has teeth cracked. And do you still believe you're the chosen nation? Look at you, you're being demolished, you're being beaten. And he said to him, the Cloisenberger says to the Nazi, as long as we are being beaten and not beating, I believe that we represent the chosen nation. Right. So maybe at the end of the tochacha over here is a whole list of, a whole slew of events that are designed to beat us. Beat, beat, beat. And sometimes some people, like that Nazi, Machshmo, have the mentality of that when you are beaten, it means that you're not chosen and that you are not liked and you're dead. Right? And therefore comes along right after that beating, the parsha of Erechin, this value to teach you, when a person pledges his value to the Beis HaMikdash, to teach us that each person has a value and has a worth. Being beaten is not necessarily, right, is not necessarily reflective of having no worth. Maybe in our modern day civilities, you know, the strong man wins, the bully gets the lunch, but that doesn't make him chosen, and that doesn't make him good, and that doesn't give him any value. Or the person with value, a person's value has nothing to do with being beaten. In fact, just the opposite. Usually being beaten is reflective of the fact that you have more value. Especially when it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, punishments are not there to humiliate us, punishments are there to educate us. And that, you know, you only educate those that you care about. So when your teacher sometimes gives you a hard time, it's hopefully not coming out of the fact that you have no value, but only because he respects and values you a lot. I once had a student, it wasn't a student actually, he came in on the first day of yeshiva, and I mentioned this to somebody, he said to me, hi, my name is... I'm going to, and they said some party school next year. I'm going to Indiana next year. You're going to try to change my mind? So I said to him, well, it depends how much I get to like you throughout the year. Right? Meaning that if I care for you, then I will. And that's not a bad thing. So it's the same thing over here. The tochacha, sometimes we get punished, and it's a, but that's not a bad thing. It's reflective of the fact that Hashem Baruch Hu cares and wants us to mend our ways. Alright, we'll stop here. Everyone have a great Shabbos. Next week, Be'ez Hashem.